on our third case for today, 01-0656, State v. Baron M. and Mr. Jovovic.
That's right.
Close enough?
Yes.
Jovovic,
Assistant correct.
State Public Defender representing Baron M. Welcome.
Thank you. Yes, I'm representing Byron M. In this case, Michael Jovovic. The last time I was before this court is some 4 years ago in La Crosse, and I was sitting approximately where my co-counsel, Janice Ballastreri, was. And my colleague at that time was arguing the case for the right to a juvenile jury trial. In the case of Hezzy R., ironically, the next time I appear, not this colleague, Chief Justice, but my other colleague, ironically, appearing before you now for the next time, 4 years later, I believe that this court's decision in Hezzy R. is extremely important to the analysis today, to how the court interprets 93818, the waiver statute that we're reviewing. And we're asking that the court read into that provision in some way the ability of the juvenile court or the waiver court to reconsider its motions within a reasonable time. We recognize the problem is the language of the waiver statute itself, which is that the once waiver is granted, a waiver order is granted and a criminal case is initiated, the court of criminal jurisdiction thereafter has exclusive jurisdiction. I think as will be shown in a short time, this court's decision in Hezzy R. Is critical and should show that the legislative intent did not intend such a result, that neither the juvenile court or, with the state's position, no court can reconsider a juvenile waiver decision.
Would it make any difference if after the criminal court has asserted its jurisdiction, in this case there were proceedings, as I understand it, in the criminal court that went forward. Would it make any difference if it hadn't happened? In other words, there was simply 93818 took place, there was a waiver, he went into adult court and nothing took place. Would that make any difference?
What you're picturing is no criminal complaint was filed some reason.
Right.
It would make it easier.
No preliminary,
It would make it easier because the criminal court would not yet have jurisdiction. But I think this opinion has much more of a wide-ranging, this case has a much more wide-ranging effect. I don't think the simple fact that the case has been moved into criminal court changes the fact that, at least according to the state, no one can reconsider. Now, I think under the example you've given, I think reconsideration might be a little easier because that order hasn't taken full effect. We could have prevented it perhaps by staying the juvenile court proceedings and putting it into the same posture. But once again, I don't think that's the critical thing, and I think that would be a rare case. It would be really, like happened in this case, this happened over the Christmas holidays, and it's surprising what can and can't be accomplished over the Christmas holidays.
Counsel, is there any possibility that you could have asked the adult criminal court in this case for what is oftentimes referred to as a reverse waiver? In other words, you could have asked for a return by that court to the juvenile court?
Under the statutory scheme set up under 938 183, only when the criminal court has original jurisdiction can it have a reverse waiver, or if after adjudication a lesser included offense comes about. And once again, that's original jurisdiction.
So in other words, your position would be that there really would be no statutory authority to ask the adult criminal court to send it back to the juvenile court.
That's correct. And there is one authority which I can get to at any point, but HNT, which seems to indicate that the court that determines jurisdiction is the one. The other court is precluded by res judicata and issue preclusion from ruling on that, and it's the original court through reconsideration or some other method that can reconsider it.
Why isn't the appeal that's available here a sufficient vehicle to take care of any miscarriage of justice?
It could be. Spent a lot of time thinking about this in the last year and a half. As happened in AE, I think this court recognized long ago that waiver is sort of a unique animal, and yet sometimes you have to create whole new procedures because it just doesn't fit any scheme, because it really is a final order in one court, but it isn't really a final order because there are going to be proceedings in another court. You're going to have to excuse me, but I've lost track of the question.
That's no problem. We probably caused that by the
question. So. I have a question, Counselor.
Yes.
Can the adult court judge, the criminal court judge sitting in criminal court jurisdiction, entertain the motion for reconsideration?
Could. The state's position is no. I haven't found any case that would support that. In fact, the case I'm talking about, HNT, says just the opposite. The court that originally determined jurisdiction, here the juvenile waiver court, determined jurisdiction was proper in the adult court. No court of concurrent exact jurisdiction, because they're all circuit courts, can review another circuit court's jurisdictional decision through issue preclusion and res judicata.
I'm not talking about a review in the sense of an appellate review, but
yes.
Just
entertaining
the reconsideration motion under 806-07. That case didn't implicate that statutory scheme, did it?
I think it did only be. It was dicta, but it. I think reconsideration could have been in the other court had there not been issue preclusion. And that's the way the HNT dealt with the case. Now, I'm not adverse to this court saying that the criminal court can reconsider and send back the case. We have a few slight problems as what, how does the court, the adult court, determine what the previous judge would have done with the new information. Is it critical enough to send it back to the juvenile judge? Or is reconsideration really an entire reconsideration of the waiver proceeding? Because the criminal judge will not know, unless the record is produced, the entire record, what occurred, what was important, and the reconsideration would not. I just don't see it as the best relief possible, although certainly for our clients, better than nothing.
It's the same judge, right?
No.
No?
No.
You went to a different judge?
No, but
in some counties it can be.
That's exactly right. I was going to say, in a small county, we're just in one day the judge just switches hats.
Right.
And telling that judge you can't reconsider it's just practically, it doesn't make sense. And I'm sure the legislature didn't intend that waiver was waiver forever unless you appeal. I finally came back to your question, Justice Crooks, by the there is a possibility, had this originally been appealed, interlocutory appeal to the Court of Appeals, and then the information came to light, either in the trial court, because Section 808.075 gives the trial court jurisdiction to hear all kinds of matters until the record goes up on appeal. Once the record goes up on appeal, I assume that counsel for a client like Byron could ask the Court of Appeals, based on new discovered evidence, the mistakes or whatever were the newly discovered matters, to either remand the case or determine whether there's good cause to have a reconsideration of that.
That's your problem, isn't there? One of your problems, counsel. I mean, an easy answer is, to take an interlocutory appeal. But then the question is, what is the record and what is the issue on appeal?
That's
the issue on appeal isn't this new information. The issue on appeal is what the court had when the court made the initial finding. Now, I don't know how you procedurally then supplement the record in the Court of Appeals for the court. I mean, I don't know how you do that. And that's the problem with an appeal of the initial determination, because that's what you're being asked to appeal, not with regard to a motion for reconsideration in and of itself.
Right. Well, as we conceded in the brief, if had we appealed the original waiver, under the abuse of discretion standard, which is the standard, the court had plenty of reason to waive. I mean, it wasn't an irrational decision. But the new information, the court acknowledged herself that it was very important information which she would have wished she had known about or had even noticed when she herself was reviewing the prosecuted merit of the case. Now, you're correct that the record is empty, and that's why the best way to do to have relief in these kinds of cases is have the case brought back as soon as possible, or brought a motion brought. The judge could have brought one on her own as part of its inherent authority, in my opinion, because a court can always reconsider its original order or judgment if some critical mistake comes to the court's attention, and brought the parties back and given them notice. I've just noticed that this was a serious, we all went under the impression this was a 2-year commitment. My God, it's a 5-year commitment, and that's important to me. Why didn't I notice that? And I'll have you argue about that, and I'll make my decision.
The state suggests you do it on ineffective assistance of counsel.
Well, that might work if it's counsel's ineffective, but we don't even know yet. And that would be a reconsideration also.
Now, I read your brief to ask for a very narrow rule. Maybe I'm mistaken, because I hear you asking here for a broader rule. As I understood it, that you would allow reconsideration within the same 10 days that you could bring an appeal.
Right. And I was looking at the federal rule there and trying to put it like that. And I know this court likes to make the narrowest possible ruling. What could be, I think, reasonable is if such a motion is filed within the time limits appeal, it's presumptively reasonable. It's a reasonable time to file. That doesn't speak to the merits, to the whether it's new information, whether it's important information. But it's reasonable time to get the motion for reconsideration started. Anything beyond that time, you may have to put in more proof as to why it took so long.
It seems to me it's a little messy because what you have is the juvenile court still reconsidering, and your client was still filing information and reasons for a reconsideration as of January, I think it was 31st.
Yes.
Almost a full month from the time the initial motion was brought. And so you got that juvenile court working, and in the meantime you've got a criminal case moving along, which is very wasteful of judicial time, which creates problems. It creates problems about whether you release somebody, right, and where you release them to, that it's going to be bail or they're going to be detention. Doesn't seem to work too well. It seems to me you got to have something that's going to work better. So maybe I've just overstated the problems.
Well, in this case, a lot of the things work themselves out in that the state has really been quite kind and has not tried to move the case along. And was also helpful in that they agreed that the juvenile could stay in juvenile corrections under a previous order, which is one of the reasons counsel chose not to stop the presses everywhere. So the case, I recognize what the court is saying. In AE, the Chief Justice suggested that an order staying the criminal proceedings ought to be filed in the criminal court.
So where has your client been all this time? Where has the client been spending his time?
He's still in juvenile corrections until June 3rd.
And what happens on June 3rd?
He'll be brought back to the jail. Or brought to the jail.
For what purpose?
Because the juvenile adjudication that he's there for will have expired. That's the only reason. There's another case. That's why he's there. It was a disorderly conduct.
And how long has he been in detention? I mean, how
since
long
is October
since this case?
3rd of 2000. October, November of 2000. So that's how long it's been pending. Now, some of this, I hope, is not our fault.
Could I clarify? Is the state taking an opposite position from you because it doesn't want this particular juvenile to go back to juvenile court, or is it because they abhor the principle that you are advocating, or both?
Ooh, that's it. I wish I could divine why.
In other words, could you say, Mr. Criminal Court or Ms. Criminal Court Judge, the state doesn't object to you sending this case back to juvenile court. If you more or less stipulated to that, who's going to object?
Well, that often happens, indeed. One thing you have to worry about is you have to have authority for what you're doing, and in case someone objects, it may be void, but if you don't have authority. But I agree, a lot of times things can be worked. I think just Judge Nix, in this case, as the juvenile judge, suggested that something be worked out, because once she found out the new information, and it wasn't. But I can't divine, I wish I could, why the state chooses to fiercely fight the...
Well, let me say that. I'll lay this right on the table. I'm a little bit troubled by the concept of sort of dual jurisdiction.
Yes.
Where the juvenile court has jurisdiction to reconsider while the other court supposedly has exclusive jurisdiction over a pending criminal case.
Yes.
I have trouble with that concept. But I also have trouble with the concept that if the juvenile court thinks the case ought to come back there, and the criminal court judge would like to send it back there, that there's no power to do that. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, we're trying to make sense of, we're trying to make sense of something, and it may not occur all the time. As the court is probably aware, and those that have sat in circuit courts themselves, is that reconsideration is just like a daily activity on all sorts of matters before the case becomes final. And here we have a case that's not final. So it can't be incorporated within the ultimate resolution of this case, because it's final as to the juvenile court and now it's in criminal court, and this order, this decision, is not incorporated. In fact, the courts have said that if you plead guilty, you waive any jurisdictional claim to what happened in juvenile court, an improper waiver, illegal waiver. And what do you do? Do you carry it on through trial, post-conviction motion, appeal? You know, it's been, now you're 2 years later, and the juvenile is what happened in some of these other cases, like Pablo R., is now an adult. And even if it's sent back to the juvenile court, there's nothing that can be done.
Can the state dismiss the criminal action and start all over again in juvenile court?
I didn't...
Can the state dismiss the action in criminal court and start all over in juvenile court?
I don't believe so. They'd have to... The judge would have to agree to that for some reason, yes.
Sure, with the court's approval, but...
Yeah.
In Justice Prosser's hypothetical, that's a possibility, isn't it? Where everybody agrees...
Where everyone agrees, yes.
There's nothing in the statutory scheme that precludes
that. Right. Nothing in the statutory scheme on that, and many things like that do happen in the course of practice, but we're talking about what can we suggest to trial judges that they can do, and I don't think this is an everyday occurrence. This is a pretty rare occurrence. Otherwise, it would have been before the court before. When unusual occurrences like this happen before in cases like State X Rel AE and DH, where the statute sort of left a gap. What do you do where expediency and confidentiality and the importance of keeping a juvenile, the court came up with a procedure where appeals could be heard quickly and where that hadn't occurred before. In fact, pointing back to why the court is so confused. Now, in AE, the ultimate decision was on consideration because they determined in the first case that a waiver order is a final order, which would certainly satisfy me. I mean, that would make it a lot easier. A waiver order is a final order, and then they reconsidered it under Jenich and looked at all the factors and said, well, no, it doesn't conclude all the proceedings. But to me, and why I call it a unique statute, is that it actually ends everything in juvenile court.
Counsel, I've got another question that maybe seems like somewhat of an aside, but it's something that concerns me. My understanding is that there's a motion for reconsideration filed, and then several weeks later, there is a supplement, if you will, to that motion, I think by letter. And the supplement makes an argument that, first of all, this person could be handled under the serious offender program. But secondly, then, gets into the question of deportation.
Yes.
And I said this really is an aside, but it troubles me. Isn't it possible whether a young person is found delinquent and placed in the serious offender program, or found guilty and sentenced in adult court, that there still could be deportation? Do the federal laws really draw that distinction?
From my understanding, yes, and I can't give you a clear definition of that because that wasn't, you know, part of the this appeal, but, and that keeps changing. I mean, there's been changes in the law since this brief has been filed, but my understanding is a juvenile adjudication is not a crime of moral turpitude, which automatically leads to deportation consequences.
This also may be an aside, but I couldn't understand from the facts. Was there another juvenile case pending at the time that this waiver case was addressed?
Against this juvenile? Yes, an Iowa case, and that's been dismissed, correct? I mean, you wouldn't know that, but...
I mean, what through my mind was, I thought, how could that happen? Because once waived, always waived under this law.
Right.
And then it made me think of, although I didn't have it in my appendix, if that admonition had been given during the colloquy, that is, that once you are waived, you realize that you're always waived.
As I recall, I mean, some of this is on, I think it's mostly on the record. Iowa refused to waive. It came to Wisconsin, and Judge Nix just decided not to rule on that case during the same proceeding, waived on these two case numbers, and ultimately the Iowa case was dismissed.
Because I'm interested, are judges giving in their colloquy the once waived, always waived admonition?
Was there a colloquy?
A waiver.
Yes.
Even a waiver of a waiver hearing has to be knowing and voluntarily made by the juvenile, is my understanding.
Yes.
And that it is recommended that as part of any kind of colloquy, given the statute that provides once waived, always waived, in other words, if you're waived into adult court on a case, any subsequent cases that would normally be juvenile become adult cases, that it's recommended that the juvenile is advised of that statute. Did that happen in this case?
No.
You don't know, or it did not happen?
That was not advised, and I can't think of anyone.
I'm just wondering what.
But it became somewhat moot because it disappeared from the record and from the case. You're saying that the juvenile at this waiver hearing was not advised. I certainly don't remember reading the record and seeing that.
No. Thank you, counsel.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Assistant Attorney General Erdan, representing the state of Wisconsin.
May it please the court, I'm Wisconsin Assistant Attorney General Jolie Erdan, and I represent the state in this action. The state is asking this court to hold that once the adult criminal court has exercised its jurisdiction, a juvenile cannot file a motion for reconsideration to reconsider the waiver decision in the juvenile court. And that is all this court need hold, because that is all that is asked of this court. And this court should enter that holding for three reasons. First, the statute is clear on its face. Second, Varen waived the issues for reconsideration that are raised in this court. And third, fundamental fairness has been served in this case.
What was the second? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
That Varen waived the issues for reconsideration that are raised in this court. The statute says that...
When you talk about waiver of those issues, are you talking about the issues that were raised in that supplemental motion? In other words, the issue of serious offender and the issue having to do with deportation?
Yes, there were two issues raised subsequent to the motion for reconsideration. The motion for reconsideration raised what were essentially appellate errors, that the trial court had incorrectly limited testimony on certain matters, had cut off cross-examination. Those, the state contends, are issues that would have been proper on appeal. Subsequent to that motion for reconsideration, approximately 20 days later, trial counsel wrote a letter to the court raising the serious juvenile offender issue for the first time. 8 days later, I believe, trial counsel then raised the INS issue for the first time. The state contends that those issues, the serious juvenile offender program issue and the INS issue, were not properly raised before the court because they were not part of the motion, even under Varin's rule, which says that that motion must be brought within 10 days. Those issues were not part of the motion that was raised within 10 days.
Suppose these secondary issues had been raised on January 3rd. What would be the result then?
Well, there are several answers to that question. First, why we're here is because there's an issue whether the juvenile court should consider the motion at all, no matter the substance. Of course, the state's answer to that is no, based on the plain language of the statute, which says that once the waiver order is entered, that the adult criminal court has exclusive jurisdiction of the case. Exclusive is clear on its face, means that to the exclusion of the juvenile court.
Don't you take the position, excuse me for interrupting you, but don't you take the position that what is really significant here is that the criminal court had exercised its jurisdiction, that there was a complaint filed, there was a initial appearance, there was a bail amount set, there was a waiver of a preliminary hearing, and the filing of an information. Isn't your claim that that's all significant here?
Certainly it is, and that's the precise issue raised by this case.
Let's assume none of that had happened. Let's assume no criminal complaint had yet been filed, and now you've got this motion for reconsideration. What's the state's position there?
That if, even in absence of the adult criminal court taking any action, once the waiver order is entered, the jurisdiction transfers to the adult criminal court.
So you don't think it makes any difference that the criminal court had taken these steps in the process?
That's correct. It makes no difference, although those are the precise circumstances of this case.
And the reason it makes no difference, you say, is because the language is so clear in 938.18.6. That is, that statute provides the court of criminal jurisdiction thereafter has exclusive jurisdiction. Is that why? That's the whole basis of your argument, that this is clear language and it's a done deal with that clear language. Is that correct?
It's not the entire basis. It is this court can decide this case on that sole basis, and the state contends that that is the correct basis on which this court should decide this case.
Let me give you a fact situation and tell me how this clear language applies to it. In some of these cases, and I'm dealing with Southeast Asians, you don't know what the age really is. These kids are in refugee camps, and heaven knows what their age is. So what if it's conclusively shown that a juvenile court waives jurisdiction, but within 10 days, the attorney for the juvenile can conclusively show that the kid wasn't of age to waive jurisdiction. Let's say that the kid had not attained his 15th birthday and it was a relatively minor crime. Court has absolutely no authority to waive jurisdiction of that juvenile. How does your clear language in 938.18.6 then apply to that?
As a practical matter, I think what would happen in the hypothetical that you've raised is that the juvenile court would have waived jurisdiction to the adult court, acting in absence of the information that you talk about. The criminal court then would ostensibly proceed to hear the case, and the juvenile would want a mechanism to raise this new information to the juvenile court. I think Justice Sykes found the solution in the question that she raised earlier, which is the state could move to dismiss if there truly were new evidence. In the case where there is actual new evidence, which is not the case that we have here, there should be a mechanism. The state agrees there should be a mechanism by which a court can can consider that information.
So your clear language would read as follows, under 938.18.6, the court of criminal jurisdiction thereafter has exclusive jurisdiction, the criminal court, the adult court, has exclusive jurisdiction, comma, unless the adult court decides on that charge to dismiss it and kick it back to the juvenile court.
That language doesn't need to appear in the statute for the scenario that we've discussed to occur. The current statutory scheme not only allows for that situation, but it dictates that situation. If the juvenile court acts in absence of information which bears upon jurisdiction and enters a waiver order, the adult criminal court properly has jurisdiction. Period. Now, if something comes up to question the court's jurisdiction, the court has inherent authority, the criminal court I'm talking about, has the inherent authority to revisit the jurisdictional question. If new evidence were to come to light that were not previously available, there should be a mechanism to review that.
There's a maxim, I think, in the law. You know, lots of times there's questions whether or not, does this court have jurisdiction? Does that court have jurisdiction? Does a federal court have jurisdiction in a state? And the maxim in the law, I think, is that a court always has jurisdiction to entertain the question of whether or not it has jurisdiction. I don't know. I can't cite an authority, but I think that's right. Let me ask, if deportation arguably in the reality of deportation goes to whether the court would exercise jurisdiction or decline jurisdiction, in other words, impact upon the initial determination, how does that play into a motion for reconsideration? If a juvenile court can always, I'm not threading the needle, but I'm almost mm-hmm. there. Do you understand where
I'm Yes, I think I do.
I'm not sure. Maybe you can help me.
I think first, I think the situation you're discussing, once the juvenile court enters the waiver order, the question is no longer a question of the juvenile court's jurisdiction. It is now a question of the criminal court's jurisdiction.
In my hypothetical, though, or in my question, the issue of deportation would weigh heavily on the juvenile court's decision regarding jurisdiction.
And I think your hypothetical is not hypothetical. It's this case. The juvenile court judge said that she wished she would have known, in effect, that of the INS implications. Several responses to that issue. First, whether the juvenile court can consider that particular information, and if you'd like to talk about different type of information, I'm happy to do that, but with respect to INS proceedings, that particular information is not properly considered by a juvenile court. A juvenile court, and this is under this court's holding in the interest of the Court of Appeals, cannot consider the sentence that an adult court may give in its waiver decision. An INS...
But deportation is collateral to sentencing.
And certainly if a juvenile court can't consider what the adult court may or may not do in getting to its waiver decision, it certainly can't consider a collateral consequence of the waiver decision. Second, the so-called evidence that's offered here is not evidence at all. It's speculation based upon the testimony of another attorney who had one other case involving deportation, which I'm not sure is actually evidence of what the INS will or won't do, And third, it certainly is not newly discovered. In the first portion of the waiver hearing, and in the record, there's 20 pages of transcript on the issue of where Varen was born, when, and the issue was the date of birth when it was discussed. However, Varen's mother testified where they came from, how that happened, that she was a permanent resident of the United States, not a citizen, that Varen was born outside of the United States, and that she feared going to the INS with what she considered, or what she says Varen's true birth date is, because of whatever those possible ramifications would be. So the issue of Varen's status with respect to the INS certainly was not discovered for the first time after the juvenile court waived Varen into adult court. So it's not even new evidence if as Varen claims it is.
Do you agree with your opposing counsel that a juvenile adjudication and a commitment to the serious offender program could not be the basis for a deportation proceedings, that only the adult convictions could be the basis?
I do not know the answer to that question. I do not practice immigration law, so I don't know the answer to that. I would be happy to research that and brief that for the court if necessary, but I can't answer that question.
Could you speak, please, to the issue of reverse waiver under 970.032(2).
I agree with Mr. Jovovich that reverse waiver is not available in this case. Reverse waiver, based on the statutory language, is available only when the adult court exercises original jurisdiction.
All right. Now, let me ask this. Let me give you a hypothetical. Let's take this case. And after waiver, Varen was charged with a state criminal offense. Would the criminal court then have the authority to engage in a reverse waiver? Under
if he's charged with a new offense after he's been waived to adult court on, say, this offense,
that's
or
right,
these offenses?
Under 938.183(1)(b).
I don't have...
B, a juvenile who is alleged to have violated any state criminal law, if the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction under this chapter and Chapter 48 has waived its jurisdiction over the juvenile for a previous violation, and the criminal proceedings on that previous violation are still pending.
That gives the adult criminal court original jurisdiction over the case. I'm not certain if that would then meet the condition precedent to waive the juvenile back to, or to waive the defendant back to juvenile court. But then we run into the problem that once he's been waived, he's deemed waived for the future. So I think the end result would be that the juvenile would remain in criminal court.
Here's my basic concern. If you argue that the criminal court cannot send the person back, you can have a situation where the juvenile court judge would like the juvenile back, the criminal court judge would like to send the person back, and yet the statute seems to say, well, you can't do that. That does not make sense to me. What would you advise counsel in that situation?
Well, first, There is a mechanism for the adult court to send a juvenile back. It just isn't reconsideration. It's a motion to dismiss based on a jurisdictional challenge if the juvenile can show that there was some error, or not error, that would the remedy for that would be appeal. If there's new evidence to question, call the court's waiver decision into question based on based on new evidence, then the adult court could dismiss the case and send that back to the juvenile court.
That's an option that was left open in the HNT case.
Yes, I think it was.
Okay, let's just see if we can sum this up. You and the public defender, the state and the public defender agree that there should be some way of overturning the waiver.
We agree on the fact, I think,
okay,
not on the...
Okay. Okay. Just as a general matter, that there has that there should be some technique to review the waiver. And it seems to me that you and the public defender agree that appeal may not be adequate because an appeal will not handle the issue of new evidence.
Okay.
So the only question now is how you do it, since we've agreed on some basics. Now, the public defender's position is that the juvenile court does it, and that you go back to the juvenile court and you make your motion there and you call it a reconsideration motion, and the public defender's office is not willing to be bound by a 10-day rule. Okay? That's what I understand them to do. You think that... he can't go back to the juvenile court because the statute clearly says that the adult court has exclusive jurisdiction once there's been waived.
Correct.
Okay. So you would have us go into the adult court. But we cannot use a reverse waiver because the statute doesn't cover.
Correct.
So you are going to devise a system called dismissal.
Correct.
Without prejudice.
Correct.
And so everybody goes into the adult court, and the juvenile makes a motion to dismiss the case without prejudice because there is new evidence that had it been presented to the juvenile court would not have waived.
Yes.
Right. So then the adult court would then reconsider without the juvenile record, without the record from the juvenile court?
I'm not
sure. Are we going to have a transcript? Will the adult court see the transcript of the juvenile waiver hearing?
I don't know as a practical matter if the juvenile file is transferred with.
Okay, so now the adult court is not going to have the benefit of what happened in the juvenile court, but is going to hear from the lawyers and hear testimony as to why there was waiver and why that waiver should be at least reexamined. And then the adult court is not going to really re-examine the waiver, but is going to dismiss the case without prejudice. And the state will then go back into juvenile court and bring the proceeding again. Is that how it works? I'm trying to spin out what we actually do to each other here.
Well, I think, yes, that is what would have to happen.
Okay, so it goes back to juvenile court. Will it go back to the same judge? Might or might not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it goes back to juvenile court. Now, what does the judge do? Judge open that juvenile waiver proceeding, or does the judge start a new one? Because we have a new proceeding.
I think the judge would start a new one.
Okay. We assume that. Do we have any problems with the statute of limitations here? We've now gone to about 8 months, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe 12 if you're not lucky.
It's certainly possible, yes.
Okay.
Wouldn't it be told during the pendency of the proceedings?
Pardon?
The statute would be told during the pendency of the proceedings, presumably. So statute of limitations probably wouldn't be an issue.
I'm not sure on that. I will take your word for it that the statute of limitations would be told.
How about if he's 70, he just turns in those 8 months that he's talking about, goes from 16 and three quarters to 17 and a fourth.
We can't toll his age.
That's right. And then after 17 and a fourth, if you're starting a new proceeding, mm-hmm. there's no way you can go into juvenile court, right?
So you're now back in juvenile court. Let's assume the kid's still 16. Or not at least 17. And so now we've got the same judge. Does the judge have to get a new proceeding, right? States brought this action again. Do we start totally afresh, or can the judge take the old record and start from there?
We probably start from scratch. I assume that the parties might work out some sort of stipulation to carry over the old information.
All right. And now, and before I forget this, at one point you said that the adult court would dismiss if there was a jurisdictional challenge, but you really don't mean jurisdictional. You mean a challenge on the merits of waiver.
Yes.
Okay.
What's the difference?
So then, I don't know what you were going to ask, but I was going to say, what difference does it make if you don't go back? Why don't you just go into the juvenile court, mm-hmm. reconsider it, and stay the adult court, and I think it'd be faster.
Because the legislature hasn't allowed for that.
Well, the legislature hasn't allowed for anything I said either.
Well, the court's ability to do that would be based on a court's inherent authority to examine its own jurisdiction as raised by the juvenile. And certainly, as your line of questioning suggests, this is a complicated process. And we don't suggest that it's otherwise, but there's no reason to think that this is a situation that occurs frequently. And as this case demonstrates, it's not even raised in this case that that would be an option. While Barron could raise what he contends to be new evidence in the trial court can make a threshold determination that the motion has some merit or doesn't have merit. In this case, there wouldn't be merit to that sort of a motion. So I don't think there's any reason to think that all juvenile cases are going to be subject to this sort of long, drawn-out process. There's no reason to believe that this has happened before and will happen again in the future. As we see, this case doesn't even present a case where that solution is possible. This case doesn't even present a case where reconsideration is an option even under their own rule. The bases for reconsideration and their motion for reconsideration were properly appellate errors. Errors that could have been raised on an appeal. There's no reason to think that the situation or the process afforded to juveniles under the current system is inadequate or insufficient. There's simply no evidence of that, and this record demonstrates the contrary.
Counsel, let me have you sit on the bench in Marathon County, put on a robe and put on my shoes. And I'm the juvenile judge, and I'm also the criminal court judge. Have this case right here, this one in front of me. And let's say, maybe unlike this case, but let's say I'm convinced this guy's going to be deported. There's just no doubt about it. And so I thought, oh, my God, you know, I'm not sleeping at night because I waived this kid. And he's going to be deported. And let's say I had the exchange that I actually did have this weekend with the INS second in charge in Chicago about what happens to kids who are from Laos. Laos won't take them back, and so they're kind of held indefinitely incarcerated someplace, I think. So there I am, thinking about this. And then Monday morning, the new, young, aggressive assistant DA comes in and files the charge. And I think to myself, boy, this case should be dismissed. And he's not dismissing it, or she's not dismissing it. You know, I'm the judge in both. I know that I made maybe the right decision at the time, but really the wrong decision that will have tremendous consequences about this person's life, and I'm convinced of it. And I have to sit there and be quiet and or talk up and say, please, but I have no authority to do anything about it unless the new, young assistant DA makes the magic motion to dismiss. Is that right?
No, the motion in that case would be brought by the juvenile in the adult court. But that case presents the same situation as a case where a court has, in its mind, having experience, contemplates what the sentence may or may not be in adult criminal court. And while that may very well be on the mind of a judge who contemplates waiver, it's not a proper basis for consideration. It's not a proper basis upon which to make that consideration. Judges make difficult decisions all the time, but judges are also trusted to consider the factors that the law says they can consider and not to consider the factors that the law says they can't consider. And in the interest of CW suggests that a possible INS implications are not a factor. It's a collateral consequence of a conviction if one is obtained. And a court can't consider the direct result of waiver, which would be given a conviction or a plea, what the sentence may be. A court then is prohibited from considering what the INS implications may be. And while that may be unfortunate, the correction for that is not to find that there is an exception to the statute waiving jurisdiction by writing in an exception where someone wishes they could bring other arguments to the court's attention. The solution to that is to go to the legislature and have the legislature make possible INS implications one of the bases upon which a court can make a waiver decision. And that issue brings me back to the issue of fundamental fairness, which is that there's no suggestion in this case that the juvenile did not receive fundamental fairness. The juvenile received all the process that was due to him under the fundamental fairness test. And what has been raised here are simply arguments that the juvenile wishes he had raised earlier. These are not arguments that should cause a court to reopen its decision. These are legal arguments that could have been raised earlier, and there is another solution for that, which is at the close of the adult criminal case, a juvenile may bring a motion for post-conviction relief based upon ineffective assistance of counsel. And while that may not occur in every case, and we don't comment on whether counsel was or was not ineffective in this case, if the juvenile wishes that different information had been before the court that considered waiver, there already is an avenue of relief. There are a couple we've identified.
How old is the juvenile right now?
I believe he's 17.
So for as practical matter, this could not be the subject of a motion to dismiss to reinitiate proceedings in juvenile court because juvenile court would be outside its jurisdiction?
Just based on age, and I go back to Justice Sykes' remark that the time would be told, so I'm not certain whether the complaint could be brought in juvenile court again. But what's important to note is that in this case, there's no basis for any such motion to dismiss. What's been raised is not any new evidence that was not known by counsel at the time that the waiver decision occurred. What has been raised here are new arguments, new legal arguments that should have or could have been raised earlier. And this does not present a situation where the juvenile court is truly in a situation where new evidence has come to light that it could not have considered earlier. Therefore, reconsideration is not even necessary in this case. And again, the statute doesn't allow for it. And if Varen wishes that it were available, the remedy lies with the legislature, not in asking this court to rewrite the statute.
In your brief, the alternative you gave was not this dismissal discussion, but rather ineffective assistance of counsel. Do you want to address that? That was the alternative that you offered.
Certainly, and that is an option that is still available at the conclusion of the criminal proceeding, assuming that Varen does not plead guilty if the criminal proceedings result in a conviction. He still has post-conviction relief available to him. If he thinks his lawyer should have done something differently, he may bring a post-conviction motion, raise ineffective assistance of counsel, and raise these arguments at that stage. Again, what he's raising, though, are arguments that could have and should have been raised earlier and do not provide a basis upon which the juvenile court properly could have reconsidered its own decision. So finding that the statute allows for such motions is not necessary. This court can decide this case on the sole issue of whether the statute itself allows for that. The language of the statute says that jurisdiction transfers and to the criminal court and that the exclusive jurisdiction rests with the criminal court. So under the language of the statute, it's clear that a motion then filed with the juvenile court cannot properly be considered. I see my time has ended.
Could I ask whether it is possible, and correct me if my terminology is just wrong here, could there be some sort of a plea bargain provided with a plea provided it was in juvenile court?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Could the state and the public defender's office, with the juvenile concurring and everything, agree to a plea bargain provided it was in juvenile court under juvenile jurisdiction?
Now that the case has been transferred to the adult court, could the juvenile and the state agree that the court would be that the case would be disposed of in the juvenile court? I'm not certain that.
Wouldn't that necessarily involve a dismissal?
The court would have to agree. The adult criminal court would have to agree to dismiss the case, so that it could be refiled in juvenile court. In this case, I don't know that there's any such desire on behalf of the state, since the state is pursuing the case in adult criminal court.
Thank you, counsel.
Well, just like I thought, I'm going to come back to Hessier. He's back there again. Pablo R. Gave a quote that it interpreted this court's decision as a whole, I think, and it said that the Juvenile Justice Code, the object of the code, is on a more informal, simple, and speedy judicial setting. A separate juvenile system was formed to delay placement of the juvenile in the formal machinery of the judicial system. And in addition, the court, gee, that's a quote from Hesse, Pablo R. says, the leading idea by the Duke Juvenile Justice Study Committee was to keep juveniles away from the adult system because there is so much hope in a juvenile system to turn the child around. Now, with those quotes in mind, the legislature could not have intended that reconsideration could not be used because that is a speedy method. And like I explained in my brief, it may mean a denial of waiver. It doesn't mean the court, it just gives the court the opportunity to determine whether there was good faith on the parties, everything was brought to their attention.
If that's true, why did the legislature explicitly specify termination of juvenile court jurisdiction upon the waiver decision being made? You said the legislature cannot possibly have meant that, but that's what it said.
Well, but it says the criminal court has exclusive jurisdiction thereafter. What happened to the juvenile court? It hasn't just...
Its jurisdiction is terminated.
We can still appeal that juvenile decision. It isn't final. It's still appealable. If the Court of Appeals found that the court was wrong, it could remand and state that the proper jurisdiction is in juvenile court, even though the criminal court has exclusive jurisdiction. There were a couple of things I wanted to address about staying in the trial court. In this particular case, there was usually the time for appeal is 10 days, and it's a very complicated and messy time. And if you take into consideration, this all occurred right over the Christmas and New Year's holiday. Well, the counsel in this case asked for a stay, and then it was scheduled for January 3rd. What happened was that the prosecution ran into the criminal court and immediately filed the criminal complaint on December 26th, the day after Christmas. So as far as stopping what was going to occur, the prosecutor jumped ahead, made sure that we were going to be ineffective in trying to stop criminal jurisdiction. One thing I've had experience with is reviewing criminal cases that have come up through the juvenile court, and I can assure most times even the waiver order is not in the record, and clearly none of the juvenile record isn't. And like I said, mostly the order waiving isn't even an important document. It's not the document that starts anything.
Would you remind me, is it the age of the juvenile at the time the crime is committed, or the age of the juvenile at the time of the filing of the delinquency petition?
For waiver?
No, that governs juvenile court jurisdiction in terms of the issue of the child's age. Is it the age?
It's when the petition is filed.
When the petition is filed.
Yes.
So the procedure that's been suggested that is available of moving to dismiss in the adult court and reissuing in the juvenile court might not raise a statute of limitations issue, but it might raise a jurisdictional issue based on the juvenile's age, because you can't stop that, as has been pointed out.
Maybe I'm wrong, but there's an active petition in juvenile court. All the court did was waive its jurisdiction. The petition is still there with the same date and all. You see, I mean, maybe the time limits would be told by it being out of there. I don't think that's a problem. The petition was filed timely, and it still exists. It's just that the court can't act on it because it's exclusive jurisdiction in criminal court.
Counsel, your red light is on, so you should use a couple of sentences to conclude your remarks, if you wish.
Right. I think if you follow the leading idea of the court, speed, welfare of the children, even under the balanced juvenile justice code, there's hope in the juvenile code. If there is, then there's no reason to speedily run the juvenile into criminal court if new matters come forth to the attention of counsel. And let me just, that brings me to one point, waiver. There's always a possibility, and it's often done, that motions that are timely are amended before the hearing, and that's what happened here. And I don't think waiver should be considered by this court. Where it should be considered is on remand to the trial court, and where a proper record could be made as to the consequences of the INS consequences of a juvenile versus an adult adjudication.
I think inherent authority, 80607, are fast, easy, and will not complicate the juvenile justice system or the justice system as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes our hearing, and oh.